In years past, it was often the case that members of the church were known for their great knowledge of the scriptures. As we look at today, however, that's often not the case. For whatever reason, that knowledge has either been lost as people have gone through the years, or perhaps it's not been passed down as well as it has been or was in prior generations. For a little while on Sunday nights, we want to turn our attention to the Old Testament and study some of the feasts observed by the Jewish people. This information, of course, is part of God's Word, the Scriptures, and as we look at it, we should find a number of lessons. As we think about the Jewish people and the feasts that they observed, we know that they basically fell into two different categories. There were the annual feasts, or the yearly feasts, and then, of course, there were what we might call periodic feasts. When we think about Jewish feasts, the best known, perhaps, was the Passover feast, and this is the topic for tonight. About 90 times in the Bible, we come to the word Passover. About 60 of those times are found in the Old Testament, that is about two-thirds of these references. According to Exodus 12:2, and we're going to be reading several verses from the 12th chapter of Exodus, the Passover occurred in the most important month for the Hebrews. Now, we may not look forward to a particular month. In fact, there may be some months that we look at, or perhaps a season that we view, and we dread it. We may look at the winter months as a time that's not very favorable to us because of snow and ice and difficult driving conditions. But for the Jews, the Passover and the month wherein it occurred were very, very important. I think most here will remember that the Passover was designed to commemorate the deliverance from Egypt. God intended this Jewish feast to be an ongoing remembrance. We want to start with Exodus chapter 12 and see what's said in verse 14. And this day, that is the time for the Passover, shall be unto you for a memorial, and ye shall keep it a feast to Jehovah throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Forever is a term in the Old Testament that can have a wide range of meanings. With this particular feast, it describes observing the feast as long as the Old Testament system was in place. Now, a key element for this Passover feast was a slain lamb. If you found Exodus 12, we also want to read some additional verses, starting with verse 1 and reading all the way down through verse 11. A lot of details that we'll go back and touch base on in just a few minutes. And Jehovah spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of the months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Then that's what I said earlier, that this was supposed to be the most important month for the Hebrews. Verse 3, speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household be too small for a lamb, then shall he and his neighbor next unto his house take one according to the number of the souls, according to every man's eating, ye shall make your count for the lamb. Now in verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish. It needed to be a male a year old. Ye shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it unto the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at even. And then in 7, and they shall take of the blood and put it on the two sides of the doorposts of the lintel, upon the houses where they shall eat it. Verse 8, and they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread. With bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roast with fire. And then God said, its head with its legs and with the inwards thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning. But that which remaineth of it until the morning ye shall burn with fire. And thus shall ye eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and ye shall eat it in haste. It is Jehovah's Passover. Now we, of course, do not live under the Old Testament system. This feast is not one that we observe. But this feast does have a number of lessons for us, and consider these points. First of all, there had been a great event that had taken place in the lives of the Hebrews. They had been delivered from Egyptian bondage. Years and years of bondage, 400 plus years, had ended, and God gave his people a method to remember it. Well, as we think about the system that we are under, that is the New Testament, the New Covenant, is there in any sense a similarity? Yes, there is. We have been delivered from bondage, not that we were in physical slavery, but in bondage to sin that has been terminated through Christ. We also find a deliverance. In fact, we find a much greater deliverance. So if it was right to remember an Old Testament deliverance, that is the smaller, it certainly then is right to remember the greater, Jesus and his releasing us from sin. Well, we find as we look at Exodus chapter 12 that blood was used in the Passover process. Blood is certainly directly connected to the Lord's Supper. Jesus' death paid the ransom for our sin. He was the sacrifice to release us from all of our wrongs. Now, we do not see the literal blood like the Jews did. They were able to see that Passover after Passover. But for us, we, of course, simply have a reminder of it, the fruit of the vine. In Exodus 12, verse 5, we read how the Passover lamb was to have no defects, zero defects. Christ, of course, was a sacrifice without sin. Specific instructions are given in Exodus chapter 12 for the observance of the Passover. And as we look at the New Testament, God has also given us detailed instructions. If the blood of bulls and goats had to be dealt with in an explicit manner, if exacting requirements were used in the Old Testament, then what would we say about remembering Jesus' blood, blood that was shed by the Son of God? Well, when it comes to the Lord's Supper in our day and time, we find some people, sometimes in the church, but certainly outside the church, who act like God has given no rules whatsoever when it comes to observing this particular part of our worship. I have had people tell me, and maybe you've had the same thing be presented to you, but I've had folks tell me over the years in this country and elsewhere that it would be okay to use steak and potatoes at the Lord's Supper. They said that's just as fine as using the elements that we use. There have been some other people who have said to me we could have 7-Up or a shot of Pepsi instead of the fruit of the vine, and they said that would be pleasing to God. Well, in 1 Corinthians 11:23, putting Exodus 12 on hold for just a minute, we have Paul telling the Corinthians that he had received something from the Lord. And then Paul says, what I received from Christ, I delivered to you, the Corinthians. Well, what did Paul receive? What did Paul receive? And what did he deliver to the Corinthians? He tells them, he reminds them, he says, I received this information concerning the Lord's Supper. Stated another way, Paul said, I received directions, I received information about the communion, and I transmitted that, I taught that when I was at the city of Corinth. Jesus instituted the supper. He did not let the disciples come up with this remembrance on their own. Just as God had rules for the Passover, so he has rules for remembering his son. Failing to abide by the instructions that we find in the New Testament, whether that's dealing with the communion or some other aspect of worship, a matter related to the church or Christian living, it is a very serious offense not to listen to God. I want to go back to Exodus 12. We did not read verse 15, but I want to move down there and read that now. 7 days shall ye eat the unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. Mark it down. Not obeying God, not adhering to his instructions, has always been a very, very serious matter. Another lesson that we learn from the Passover is found a little bit later in this chapter. If you're still following along in Exodus 12, let's move down to about verse 25 and read 25, 26, and 27. And it shall come to pass, when ye are come to the land which Jehovah will give you according as he hath promised, and ye shall keep this service, that is the Passover. And it shall come to pass, when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? And ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of Jehovah's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Previous generations knew about the Passover. Other generations also were aware of it, but God realized that it was possible, as the generations continued, for a generation to arise where people may not have this knowledge. God recognized that children might see this feast and they might be curious about it. They may not have the knowledge. They may not have the instruction that existed in previous generations because it was not transmitted. Religious instruction was not left to Bible class teachers for the Hebrew people. There was religious instruction in the homes. This was God's command to the Jewish people so that young people would understand what was being done. Last Monday, I sent out a sad devotional for those who were on the BNP list. A little later, if you saw this, it's going to be a quick repeat for you. If you didn't see it, well, you're going to get it tonight. A little later this year, a special day is being set aside for families to sit down and eat together. That's coming up within the next 60 days. People have concluded that life in America is so busy, so hectic, we're running so frantically here, there, and everywhere that a special day has been set aside so a family will hopefully be able to take an hour or so and dine as a group. Well, here's my question as I think about what's going on in this particular day that's being set aside. If a family is so busy that they cannot sit down on a somewhat regular basis and eat together, what about imparting religious teaching in homes? In many cases, we would have to say that religious instruction is either not being offered supports not being offered in a way where it's being done well. Many think a local congregation's teachers are the ones responsible for offering religious training. And in many respects, that is true. There is often a preacher, and religious teaching should come from him. We have Bible classes for all ages, and those should be used as fully as possible. Full advantage should be taken of those. Preachers and teachers all have a part, and they have an important part. But as we look at Exodus chapter 12, we find that parental responsibility also enters into the picture. That worked out in the Old Testament. That was part of God's plan. We can also make a case for that for the Testament that we live under today. We should be involved enough in the religious training of our children or our grandchildren, if that's who we have, or some other young people that we have contact with, that our young people are asking questions. Another Passover reference that, in my mind, cannot be avoided as we study this topic is found a little bit later from the 9th chapter of Numbers. We find as we look at Numbers 9 that there were certain conditions under which the Passover could not be eaten. For example, in Numbers 9, we find that there were some men who had been in contact with a dead person, and we're not told exactly what the circumstances were, but it's very probable that there had been some kind of burial, there had been a funeral, and these men were somehow associated with that. Numbers 9, verse 6 says that because these men were in contact with a dead body, they were not allowed to partake of the Passover. So under the Old Testament system, there were times, there were occasions, where God's people could be excluded, at least from this feast. But notice, if you will, that this exclusion was not permanent. Even though they were excluded in verse 6, let's go down to verses 10 and 11 and see what's said there. Speak unto the children of Israel. And God said, you tell them, if any man of you or of your generation shall be unclean by reason of a dead body or be on a journey afar off, yet shall he keep the Passover unto Jehovah. We sometimes in the school system have makeup days, or there's something else that's made up. God said he had a makeup plan for the Passover. In verse 11, in the second month, on the 14th day, at even, they, who's the they? The people who missed it. They shall keep it, that is the Passover, they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. As we said, and as we need to emphasize, there was a makeup time for people who missed the Passover meal. Now, we have a similar procedure at this congregation. If people miss the Lord's Supper Sunday morning, first day of the week is when we are authorized to have the Lord's Supper, we essentially have a makeup period on Sunday night. God instructed that this be done in the Old Testament, and the people were to do it exactly as God said. Well, we've made the case that we are not under the Old Testament system, but Romans 15:4 says that we can learn from the Old Testament system. As we learn from the Old Testament, we want to make sure that we do not draw incorrect lessons. I see from time to time Christians in the Brotherhood who seem to carry over information from Numbers 9. They try to bring over a principle that is not valid. For example, there are Christians who may come to worship, and when it's time to sing, everybody else is singing, but they're not singing. There may be Christians who, for whatever reason, when it's time to pray, they're not following along with that part of the service. And we may see from time to time in a congregation of Christ Church someone skipping the Lord's Supper. Just as we have some people in Numbers chapter 9 who did not observe this particular part of the celebration, the Passover, we sometimes today have people who say, well, I'm going to exclude myself from the communion or from some other part of the service. Generally, when people think or reason in this manner, they turn back to 1 Corinthians 11, verse 27. That passage has bothered a lot of people. There, of course, we have the reference to eating the Lord's Supper unworthily. Paul is talking about, he's using an adverb there, he's talking about eating the supper in a worthy manner. Some have adopted the view, incorrectly, that they must be worthy before they eat the Lord's Supper. This line of thinking says, well, if I can look back on the last week or the last few days or the last month or the last 6 months, and I can identify some kind of sin in my life, perhaps in a person's mind a very grievous sin, then I'm guilty of wrongdoing and I'm not going to partake of the Lord's Supper. Well, reflection is good. Paul teaches reflection in 1 Corinthians 11. But as that person is thinking, hey, I have some sin in my life, guess what? The person who is sitting next to you is probably in the same boat. And they may be just as guilty as you are. It's very likely that they also sinned within the last 6 months or the last few days or maybe even that morning. Well, this kind of rationale is really Old Testament thinking. It's not New Testament thinking. 1 Corinthians 11:27 teaches God's people to partake of the Lord's Supper in a manner, in a way that is worthy. If we are thinking about Christ, if we're thinking about his death, his sacrifice, all the things associated with that, then we are partaking of the supper in a worthy manner. Maybe we can make the point a little bit plainer. If we say worship should be done in a worthy way, if it's time to sing and we're cracking jokes or listening to someone who is telling jokes, then we're not singing, we're not participating in a worthy way. If we are critiquing the fellow who's praying, then we're not praying, we're not following along in a worthy manner. Getting up while the preacher's still preaching, and we don't have that problem here for whatever reason, but that is being an unworthy hearer. We can also give in a way that's unworthy. If we are excluded from some part of the service by our own choice, and now we're looking specifically at the issue of communion, we should be excluded from it all. They stand or they fall together. But even in Numbers 9, we find that God did not really excuse the worshipers. If they missed, well, God recognized that, but there was this makeup period. God did not release these people from their obligation. They did have that makeup time. He told his people what to do, when to do it, and we have similar information in the New Testament. Therefore, when we come together as God's people, we need to do all that he's commanded. If there is a sin that bothers us, then the time to deal with that is before we come to the building. Deal with it on the way, deal with it when you get up, but go ahead, confess that sin, repent of it, and deal with it before coming to worship. Well, we've looked at several passages from the Old Testament, so I now want to direct our attention to some verses from the New Testament. This part of our study is going to be initiated from the book of John, the 18th chapter. Just before we get to John chapter 18, verse 28, we have some information about Peter. He, of course, at this time in his life was identified as having been with the Lord, and Peter denied this charge. He said, "No, I was not." Peter denied this charge three times. After the third denial, just as Jesus had prophesied, there was a rooster that crowed, verse 27. Then we have the information in verse 28 of John 18. They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, and they themselves, talking about Jews, entered not into the praetorium that they might not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Now here is Jesus. He is an innocent man. The Lord is facing a variety of accusers. There are people who have falsely made incorrect allegations about the Lord. They've made some horrible charges. Pilate, if you will look at verse 29, asks these people, "What did Jesus do?" And they respond with the information in verse 30. And we want to read that passage. They answered and said unto him, "If this man," talking about Christ, "were not an evildoer, we should not have delivered him up unto thee." Now here, get the picture. On the one hand, you have some people lying about Jesus. They are just telling untruth after untruth. They're making all kinds of fabrications. They're making allegation after allegation, and they are all completely baseless. They're saying anything that they possibly can think of to get rid of the Lord. On the other hand, these people who are lying through their teeth are saying, "Oh, we don't want to go into the governor's palace. He's a Gentile over there. We're going to be defiled." Can you see the hypocrisy? We don't want to touch the Gentile stuff because it's Passover time. And we don't want to go ahead and be excluded from the Passover, but we can sit here and we can tell lie upon lie upon lie. Here is one of the best examples of hypocrisy that I can find in the Scriptures. I can remember some times in my life, and maybe you've had some people say this to you as well, where someone has come up to me, or I have been party to a conversation where a person said, "I do not mix religion and business." I still hear that from time to time. And when people say that, they are trying to convey the idea that Christianity is one thing and business or life in general is another. That's exactly what the Jews were trying to do in John chapter 18. They thought that they could lie. They thought that they could deceive. They thought that they could trick people. But at the same time, let's go ahead and maintain our religious standing. We don't want to touch that unclean stuff. We still want to be able to partake of the religious feast. I, at age 2, eat breakfast and lunch with about 8 people. And I think they're good people. But they are people who claim to be very, very religious. And it just amuses me to no end to hear them talk around the table and throughout the plant. I'm pretty sure that the words that I use are not what they use when they come together for services. And we see that again and again and again in the lives of people. They separate Christianity and the Bible from daily life, whether that's business or recreation, school, wherever it is. We find so many examples of that in our world. Saved people do not live in that manner. God's people, as we look at the New Testament, are distinct. Their religion is with them 24/7, 365 days of the year. In both the Old Testament and the New Testament, we find that God created a system that did several things. He wanted his people to be distinct from the world. The Jews were. With a Passover feast, with the Feast of Pentecost, with all the other feasts, with all the other Old Testament trappings that we find, God's people were distinct. We have a different way to be distinct under the New Testament, but that same basic principle, being people who have been called out of the world, being people who will be a light to the world, those are still truths that we find in the New Testament. We also find, as we look at the Old Testament, that God wanted people to have a faith that was with them all the time. And that's still true for us. He wanted people to remember key events in the Old Testament. He didn't want them to forget the deliverance from Egypt. And today, as we look at the New Testament, we have different events, especially the death of Christ, the resurrection, that we need to remember as well. We hope, because you've come here tonight, that you realize these facts that we just mentioned, and you've made the decision in your life to serve God every day. We have some reminders, the songs that we sing, the teaching that's done, the times that we give, the Lord's Supper, many things that pull us back on a regular basis to the great things that God has done for his people. And those things hopefully also serve as a reminder to tell us each day that Christianity is a way of life. It's not something like clothing that we slip on from time to time. But once we become a Christian, the Bible actually uses the wording, we clothe ourselves with Christ. We're joined to the Lord so that we are his people. We live in a way that pleases him. Tonight, have you put Christ on? Have you taken that final step? You believe in Christ, otherwise I'm sure you'd not be here. Have you decided to live as the Bible describes, repent, to confess, and then finally to take that final step, immersion into Christ for the forgiveness of sins, to be joined with Jesus, and to live a life which is holy, righteous, pure, good. A life which one day, because of how you live, you'll hear those words, come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Is that the kind of Christian life that you're living or you want to live? Do you need some help? If so, either to become a Christian or to be strengthened as a wayward child of God, tonight we stand ready to assist you in any way that we possibly can. We simply ask that you let us know about your need as we stand and sing the selected song.